Well, thanks, Carolyn. I appreciate that. It's certainly good to be here with you guys. Let me kind of just get a little show of hands here. How many folks, like, do you have an idea of what you want to do? Let's see if your head's going out. Yeah. Okay, give me an idea right here.
Urban ministry.
Urban ministry. Okay, that's not on my list. somebody else. We'll still be good, though. Somebody else. Well, after that one, nobody can top that one, right?
So. Sorry. LBS class leader.
Okay, LBS class leader. Okay. Somebody else?
Public director.
Yes.
Witnessing to sex trafficked rescued victims.
Okay. You know, I've prepared very generic, general. You guys are very specific here. This is awesome. So, well, let me just kind of start off a little bit. My name's, you know, as Carolyn said, my name's Bob Mayfield. I'm in Oklahoma. I grew up in Lubbock, Texas. So I'm a natural born Red Raider. Actually grew up a little bit in Post, Texas. Anybody know where Post is? Yeah, thank you. I feel your pain, brother. Post Antelopes. That's right. Okay. I bump into people like you all the time. There's always somebody from Post.
I was born there.
Okay, I was too. So, anyway. When the high school was still open. It still is. You're talking about the hospital. The hospital was still open. I was born in the hospital. That's right. So, I wasn't born in water. Now, when he said swimming pool, I went, okay, that's it. I'm going to have to tune him out for a while. That's just wrong. So, yeah. So anyway, I'm fairly familiar with Texas. Went to Southwestern Seminary. Actually, was here in Houston, as Carolyn mentioned. I was at Westbury Baptist Church here in Houston. I was a youth minister here. I was the third youth minister they had in 4 years. And when I left, I was the third youth minister they had in 4 years. Did not have a great experience, but, you know, it was okay. And moved back home to Lubbock and joined a little bitty church there. A friend of mine was the pastor. Had just become the pastor. And when I moved back to Lubbock, Texas, I went, I'm not going to go to that great big church I grew up in. I'm going to go to this little bitty church over here that runs 100. And went over there, and he said, Bob, I need a Sunday school director. I went, I'm your man. Be happy to do it. I don't know if he is asking me to do it, but I thought, So I volunteered to do that. And 6 months later, the church had grown, and he came up to me on a Wednesday night, and he said, Bob, said, the personnel committee is meeting tonight, and we're going to create a position for a minister of education. And he said, when they do that, if you want it, I want you to be my minister of education. And I had just been feeling God saying, Bob, it's time for you to get back into ministry. And I was actually going to go to my pastor and say, hey, if you know anybody that needs a youth minister, an education minister, or just a basic flunky, janitor, anything, I'm available. And right then and there, John said, I'd like you to be my education minister. And so I became the Minister of Education. And over the next 5 years, we were the fastest growing church in Texas all 5 years. Any way you slice it. Percentage growth, total growth, enrollment, attendance. We went from about 130 to averaging about 1,800 in Sunday school in 5 years.
Wow.
And so we had to discover and develop leaders as fast as possible. We had a day, I remember one day, we were going to two Sunday schools. We had enough Sunday school space for 400, so you try squeezing 1,800 on Easter Sunday, 2,500, 2,600 people into a Sunday school space for 400. So we were off campus. We were in 11 off-campus locations, restaurants, basements of an insurance company. The owner of a Christian bookstore about a mile away from our church let us use his, and of course his group met in the bookstore. The insurance company let us meet, and it was his class that met in the insurance company. We found an Episcopalian school that wasn't being used on Sundays, and so we said, hey, can we rent your space? And so we got 25 classrooms at the Episcopalian school. Kind of fun. And then we found Wayland Baptist University bought some space out there. It was a mile away from us, and we went over there. So we basically had Sunday school classes meeting in 11 different locations, all within about a mile and a half of our church. People would not give, we discovered another thing, parking was at a premium. People would not give up their parking spot. And so we contracted with the city buses, and city buses came in and picked up the folks on the city bus and made tours and dropped people off and came back and then picked them back up again, coming back in. And so, you know, when you have a need, you just have to figure out and just be ingenious and make it work. Mm-hmm. And so we went through all that kind of stuff. One Sunday we were, we were going to two Sunday schools. We had just opening up the new Sunday school classes at the Episcopalian school. And I remember pulling up, and there were four city buses lined up right in front of our auditorium. And we were starting 44 new classes in one day. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things you want to learn later on in this session is for every class your church starts, attendance goes up 10 people.
How many?
10. It's called the power of 10.
Okay.
We started 44 new classes. We were running 700 at the time. That Sunday, we went from 700 to 1,200, never went below 1,200 again. What's 44 times 10? 440. So roughly 500 people. And that's what we saw happen. And so this is discovering and developing new leaders, finding potential leaders. I could not, when we started those 44 classes, I thought, I don't have to enlist another leader for another year at least. No, the next week I was enlisting leaders. And so I've just discovered leader enlistment is a 52-week, it's a 365-day job for a Sunday school person. So with that said, let me share with you one thing I want you to take away from here. If you don't hear anything else, I want you to hear this, and that is this quote from Bill Hybels, Willow Creek Baptist Church. That's funny. We just annexed them into the Southern Baptist Convention. Okay, Willow Creek Community Church up in Chicago,
yep.
And it goes like this. Leadership leads. Leadership leads. I love drawing on stuff. I'm glad we have a whiteboard. This is your leader. Let's make this a bucket. This is your leadership bucket. And it's got holes in it. You know who those holes are? The people you lead. Because you're pouring your leadership into the people you lead. Now, what's going to happen after a while? Your leadership is going to get, bucket is going to get smaller and smaller and smaller. So what do you need to do?
Pour them in.
You got to pour more stuff into your leadership. This is why you're here today. You're filling your leadership bucket. And whenever you step in and you start your new leadership position, your leadership bucket's going to start emptying. And every once in a while, you might have to step back and say, I need to fill my leadership bucket again. The worst thing that can happen to your leadership area is for you to be leading with an empty bucket. And so, as you go through this session we're going to have here, as you go back through and process what Rick Ray said, you process what David said earlier, just remember, you've got to pour stuff into your leadership bucket to keep your leadership bucket at a high level. Now, some of the things you have to do that is you've got to have times where you just pull aside and just read God's Word. Just read it. Read God's Word. Let God's word fill your bucket. There are times where you need to be around godly people, and let godly people fill your bucket. There are times when you don't need to cut out and not go to worship, even though Greg Mott said it was okay tonight for you not to come to worship. You know, what a great pastor. But no, go ahead and go to worship. Because when you do that, you're filling your bucket. Take notes. Read books. I really found the two most effective things to help with this is to read your Bible and hang out with godly people. And that will help you keep your leadership bucket full. Okay? Now, with that said, let's walk through a few things here. Let me ask you guys, first of all, why are you here? And yes, this is not a rhetorical question. I just want to know, why are you here?
I've taught at other churches. I've been a member of First since 75, but I've gone away from here a 10-year period. I've never taught in this church, so I wanted to get the foundational precepts of what First would have you do as a leader.
Great. Okay. Somebody else. Okay.
I didn't know what it was.
Okay. Walk in, get your Big Mac across the street, come over, see what's going on. Why are all the cars parked over here? Yeah. Cool. Yes, ma'am.
I've been feeling like God wants me to be more than just a consumer at church.
Amen.
And I am interested in what leadership would entail.
So. Amen. Mm-hmm.
Kind of a good word.
Somebody else?
Looking to invest in a church I'm now calling home.
Oh, okay. Excellent. Anybody else? Yes, ma'am.
We lost a couple of people in my LDS, and they've moved on to other areas within the church. Kind of left a gap in our class. So I'm doing a couple of I want to call them jobs, but things that those people filled. I'm doing two things. And so just to kind of get my feet wet to see if I really want to do this on a basis.
Okay. I bet you do.
I'm sorry?
I bet you do.
I probably will.
Good deal. Well, all right. Let's get started here. Both David and Rick alluded to the why. What's your purpose? Well, your purpose is to fulfill the Great Commission, right? Isn't that your purpose? I mean, if a church like First Baptist Houston is trying to figure out its mission, we need to start further back than I'm going to right here. Well, God, your mission is to make disciples. That's the mission. Jesus didn't, this is not plan B or plan C. This is plan A, and there is no plan B.
Yeah.
Your job, your ministry, is to make disciples. And here's what I believe. Life Bible study, and I want to say this like I'm a member here. I'm not. I belong to First Baptist Church, Edmond, Oklahoma. But I'm going to say this like I'm a member right here. Life Bible study is our church's primary strategy. Now, let's go back and talk about that. Our church's primary strategy. Not your only strategy. I mean, you do vacation Bible school, you do mission trips, you've got women's ministry, you've got men's ministry, you've got a recreation center down there that's one of the best in the Southern Baptist Convention. You do all sorts of stuff all over the place. But your primary strategy to make disciples is life Bible study. And the way we do that is we connect people. See, what we are in is we are in the relationship business. Your life Bible study is actually a Bible study built on relationships. If people just want to come hear some good Bible teaching, they can just go to worship. They'll hear some great Bible teaching. But people want to hear some great Bible teaching in the context of relationships. I have never in my years of ministry ever seen somebody raised their hand in the middle of the pastor's sermon and say, excuse me, Pastor Greg, could you go back to verse 23? It just went right over my head. I don't understand that. No, I've never seen it happen. Now, I have seen one time a crazy guy slipped into church and sat on the first row, and when the pastor started preaching, he stood up and he held his hands out like that for about 10 minutes until the deacons finally figured out there was something wrong, and you know, kind of escorted him away and found out he had some problems. But aside from that, I've never seen anybody stand up in church in the middle of a sermon and ask the pastor to repeat himself or explain something. On the other hand, your life Bible study, people ask questions. It's designed for that. Where people would say, I don't understand this, or could somebody help me with this? Or let's go back and talk about this. How does this fit in your life? I mean, this is what Bible study is about. And so it's about connecting people to relationships. And what are we connecting them to? Well, the first one is a who. We're connecting them to Jesus. That's evangelism. We're going to spend a little bit of time about evangelism here in a few minutes. But we're connecting people to Christ. You heard Rick talking about the... I don't think you could have put it any plainer than the way he put it. We need to be about sharing the gospel with lost people. I mean, Luke chapter 15, the coin, the sheep, and the lost son. That's Jesus came to seek and save that which was lost, Luke 19:10. I mean, that's what we're about. And so we're about connecting people to Jesus. We're about connecting people to his truth. That's the Bible and prayer. So we're connecting people to God's truth of the Bible. We're connecting people in community. That's ministry, fellowship. It's that koinonia aspect of life Bible studies that you guys probably do so well. But we need, that doesn't just happen. There has to be a plan for it. And then finally, we want to connect people to his mission. We want the people, and hopefully you want the people in your life Bible study to be on mission. We've got plenty of people that sit. We need people that are going. And so people that are going, mission actually means, translated, it means sent. It means to be sent. In fact, in John 20:21, Jesus said, as the Father sent me, so send I you. All right? We're supposed to be on mission. And so this is basically, when I look at what's our purpose, what are we trying to accomplish here? What's the big, broad picture? Well, this is what I'm looking at. Your life Bible study is your church's primary strategy. That's not a hope. That's not. I never refer to, of course, in Oklahoma, we call it Sunday school in Oklahoma. I have 1,800 churches I've got to relate to, and about 1,500 or 1,600 of the 1,800 churches call it Sunday school. So I use Sunday school.
Some of us do too.
We can't get used to this.
New terminology.
Apparently Ben's struggling with it as well, and it's his program. So anyway, I don't refer to Sunday school or like Bible studies as a program. I don't even refer to it as a ministry. To me, it's always either an organization or a strategy. And I prefer the word strategy because it's a plan. So let's look at the next thing. You guys look awfully stiff right now, okay? Take a deep breath. If you have a question, you can raise your hand or just shout out like this lady back here in the back does. I like that. Just shout it out and join the conversation. You want to get through this before midnight, so. Your life Bible study makes the church small. I looked at the numbers, guys. 5,000 people in Bible study, 7,000 in worship, that's big. That's a lot of people. When I drove up here today, I drove in and I took the first turn and I realized that was a mistake. Because it exited and it threw me back out on the access road to the freeway. And I'm like, oh, no. So nothing like backing up in Houston, Texas. That's never a good thing. Especially when you're on the access road.
Right.
There was honking and all sorts of bad stuff taking place out there. I'm still trying to scrub some of that out of my brain because I remember this down some of the names I was called. But I backed back in, and I realized this isn't the right entrance. This is a big, intimidating place. And your life Bible study, what it does is it makes it small. Instead of it being 7,000, it's 25 or 30. Okay, it's small. you can visit, you can talk, you can get to know people's names. I hope you wear, I see everybody's got a name on in here but me. I hope everybody wears names in your Bible study group. You need to. You need to. I want to reinforce that. You need to wear name tags. When you quit wearing name tags, it means we're through receiving new people. Wear those name tags. And so it makes the church small. Chances are, if you have a problem, you need ministry, you need help, that's going to come out of your LBS. I'm not sure I can say that right. It still sounds pretty much like a Mormon church. But it's an LBS. That's where it's going to come from. I mean, I'm going to tell you right now, Pastor Greg, both of you, but he can't come. He can't see everybody goes in the hospital. Your church staff can't see everybody goes in the hospital. And so the front line of ministry is the people in your LBS. In fact, the matter is, I'll just tell you this, if Pastor Greg comes to see you in the hospital, you're in really bad shape. Speaking from experience, if a staff member comes to see you in the hospital, the doctor hasn't told you something yet. It's bad. Okay, it's pretty bad. So it makes the church small. Now, guess what? Great things happen in small groups. Great things happen in small groups. That right there ought to get you pretty excited. Jesus' ministry, he ministered to three group sizes. Actually, four group sizes. You guys remember the Promise Keeper event where he fed 5,000 men that had fish and chips? Okay, if you guys will laugh a little bit, this will okay, even if I lay an egg, laugh. Okay. Well, you don't have to force it. All right. But you know, Jesus fed 5,000, and he had 120 people he had reached that gathered in the upper room after he was buried. And then there was the 70 or so that went out two by two that he sent out, Luke chapter 10. And then there's the 12, and then there's the 3. Where did the really good stuff happen? It happened with the 12 and the 3. That's where the good stuff happens. And so the 5,000, do you remember what he did with the 5,000? He ran them off. Oh, yeah. He ran them off. You know, he's on one side of the Sea of Galilee. He feeds 5,000 people. The next morning they get up. You know, they had fish and chips, and they go looking around the Sea of Galilee. They come up to Jesus. You know, they find him on the other side of the Sea of Galilee. And they said, Jesus, you know, hey, the fish and chips were great. Can we have tartar sauce today? That would be fantastic. I mean, you know, Jesus said, no. Eat my flesh, drink my blood. And they're like, ooh, no, I don't think so. And so they left. And remember what the 12 said? Jesus looked at the 12 and said, are you going to leave too? Here's the moment of truth. As a leader, you sometimes have to test your folks to see where they are. And so he's got these 12 guys, and he looks at them and he says, are you guys going to leave too? And Peter speaks up for the 12 and he says, where else will we go? Nobody else has the words of eternal life like you do. We're in. I bet Jesus went, thank goodness. Great things happen in small groups. And so whether you're going to be teaching a class that has 50, 60 people in it or a class that has 10 or 12, you may be the care group leader, the outreach leader, or something like that. Just remember, great things happen in small numbers. You remember the story of Gideon. He had way too many men. And so what's the Lord continually telling Gideon? We need to get rid of more men. So we got it down to 300. Starting with thousands, got it down to 300. And so great things happen with small numbers. I go to China just about every year on a mission trip. I go to a little bitty town of 18 million on the other side of Hong Kong. It's called Shenzhen. And there's another little bitty town of 16 million called Guangzhou right next to it. And so we get over there, and the believers over there don't gather in large numbers. They gather in small numbers. But folks, I'm telling you, there is gospel power taking place. If today is an average day, 28,000 people a day are getting saved in China. Mm-hmm. They're predicting by 2025 or so, China will have more Christians than any other nation on earth. Be close to 200 million Christians in China by about 2025. Wow. That's amazing, isn't it?
Amazing.
That's amazing. Huh? You know how they're doing it? They're going small. The government persecutes them if they go big. So they're going small. They're going small. I just gave you a couple of these, but what are some things, just kind of throw something out here, what are some things that happen in smaller groups that are unlikely to happen in large numbers?
Transparency.
Yeah. Tell me more.
I think you build closer relationships and friendships.
Uh-huh. Keep going.
Gosh. For me, in my LDS, no one is afraid of sharing, and no one feels like that they're going to be judged. So we have such an open mm-hmm. class, and everybody speaks from their heart and what they feel. So,
very good. Somebody else?
I think we're called to use our testimony as our ministry. And, you know, you can have somebody stand up and share their testimony anywhere, but the discussion that follows is like the real heart place and those questions that are able to be answered and hearts that are able to be changed as a byproduct of that testimony. It's not able to happen in large groups.
Nice. Okay. Yeah, that doesn't happen in worship, does it? Yeah.
No.
Good work. Somebody else?
Targeting. Like, you can target a specific person. So, like, say, like, if I was in a larger group, I wouldn't feel as obligated to share, but in smaller groups, I'd share, and then somebody can speak truth over that initiative, like, immediately.
Wow.
Instead of, like, waiting for, like, oh, well, he's talking to me in this sermon, like, you get immediate feedback on what you're struggling with.
Great work. One more.
On a very, very basic level, the smaller group, the more likely to see somebody who's new.
Yeah.
Say that again.
So good.
On a very basic level, if you've got a smaller group, you can tell when somebody's never been there before.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Man, great word. Yeah. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Exactly right.
I've never
church
been
this
here
size,
before.
You can
I've never
hang
set
out.
Foot in this building before today.
Are you kidding
and
me?
I am not kidding. And I've maybe had 5 people speak to me, and that is hard.
Yeah.
I came from a church where my job was to see people who had never been there before, and I was good at it. And I walked up to everybody that breathed that had never been there before and let them know that I was glad they were there.
Yeah.
And that hasn't happened to me in 7 weeks in this country, and it's hard.
Oh, I'm sorry. Where are you from?
I just moved here. I just moved back from Germany.
I'm glad you're here.
Absolutely.
That's the first time I've heard.
It's you know something? Because we're a smaller group, I bet you wouldn't have said that while Rick Ray was talking.
Not at the fate of mankind.
But you know, we got it smaller.
Yeah.
And you shared. Thank you for sharing.
Look at that.
People are just more likely to share, just like this. People are more likely to share in a smaller group. Mm-hmm. And ma'am, what's your name?
Audra
just proved the point. This slide is over. Thank you. That was fantastic. Also, you need to know, as you become a leader in an LBS, that you are an extension of your pastor's ministry. In fact, technically, the leader of your church's life Bible studies is Greg. And then he delegates to Ben, Ben delegates to staff, and they delegate to you guys, but you guys are an extension of your pastor's pastoral ministry. And so that includes your small group Bible study, what you teach. And so when you teach, you just need to remember you're teaching under your pastor's authority. When you're doing personal care, when you visit the hospitals, when you go to somebody's house to take care of them, you are ministering under your pastor's authority. You're doing this as if you're doing it for Greg, and Greg's doing it as if he's doing it for God. So there you go. When you do fellowship, you're fellowshipping under your pastor's authority. Same thing with outreach and evangelism. When you do those things, you are reaching out under the authority of your pastor. In other words, Greg has released you. This isn't a, like, you better do it my way, or I'm going to kick you across the street, or make you back up on the track.
That's true.
It's not that. But you need to realize, Greg's giving you permission. Don't abuse the privilege.
Yeah.
Don't abuse the privilege. Don't do something that would embarrass the church. Don't do something that would embarrass Greg. Don't do something that would embarrass Jesus Christ. All right? And so these are kind of just basic ground rules on you being the extension. This was said basically earlier today, but Life Bible Study Groups is how our church is organized to carry out its God-given mission. The difference between Bible LBSs and worship. Worship is not organized. It's crowd. A Life Bible Study Group needs to be organized. It's how your church is organized to carry out its mission. Have you guys ever read through the book of Exodus? And I know it's when you're reading the Bible through every year, and about for many people, right now you're in the book of Exodus. You're about to get into Leviticus. And if you get past Leviticus, you got it made. I'm just letting you know, okay? But right now, probably if you're reading through the Bible, you're in late Genesis or Exodus. Have you ever noticed how in there when you're tempted to skim through and maybe not read every word? Not that any of y'all would do that, but I'll confess I've done it. But how precisely everything is laid out?
Yeah.
Like when the Israelites pitch camp, it's three tribes to the north, same three tribes, no matter where they are, the same three tribes are on the north. Same three tribes to the east, same three tribes to the south, same three tribes to the west. All organized. Organized. When they take down the tabernacle, you do this first, and then you do this, and organize it. When the priests go in to offer sacrifices for the organized, you do this, and you do this, and you do this, and it's all organized. And you guys remember the classic story of Moses, and he's hearing his father-in-law comes up for a visit, and he sees the big long line of people. I mean, Moses is leading 2.5-3 million people. He's the only one that can make a decision. And in the process of doing that, his father-in-law comes up and says, Moses, what you are doing is not good. So I got a better idea for you. Break everybody up into tens, fifties, hundreds, and thousands. And you only hear the big cases. Let these folks figure out the minor squabbles themselves. What's that doing? Organize them. And so, First Baptist Church has a mission. That mission is to make disciples. And the Life Bible Studies is how your church is organized to get that done. Any questions or comments so far? Y'all just want to go home, don't you?
No.
You want to hear that funny comedian. I know what's going on.
Yeah.
Okay, how can you tell if your church is growing?
You're meeting new people.
You're what?
If you're meeting new people.
Meeting new people?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Tell me more.
Well, I think when I
when our live Bible study is growing, it's usually because someone is telling their friend or their coworker.
Oh, okay, yeah.
New people. So if you're meeting new people, then kind of like the rule of 10.
Yeah, okay, excellent, okay. Somebody else tell me, how do you know your church is growing?
You're bringing new people.
Yeah. Oh, you're bringing new people.
Everyone.
Everyone, okay, everyone's bringing new people. I heard somebody over here. Oh, offerings are going out. Okay, good.
I think we've had 691 new givers since June or July was the last time I heard.
Wow.
It was amazing, I thought.
Well, I'm gonna go through a little technical exercise with you here. I want you to stay with me. But you guys know who John Calipari is? He's a basketball coach at the University of Kentucky.
Right.
Yeah, okay, just trust me. He's a basketball coach.
He is,
yeah. Since Rick Pitino got in trouble, this guy owns Kentucky. And so he has what he calls lead measures and lag measures. All right, what do you think a lag measure is? In basketball, what's the ultimate lag measure in basketball? Lag means last, you know, the final.
Wins, loss.
Did you win or did you lose? I mean, that's the final measure. How many points did you score? How many points did the other team score? Did you score more points than they did? That's the ultimate lag measure. But John Calipari discovered that there are some what he calls lead measures. And the lead measures determine the lag measures. What do you think some of the lead measures might be?
Point differential. The point differential between the scores.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's actually a lag measure.
Okay,
but this, yeah, just kidding. I was throwing one out to see if I knew what I was talking about. Yeah, okay. You guys are sneaky down here.
How do you prepare?
Yeah, okay, prepared in what?
Like for the game.
Yep, yeah, okay.
Or for this.
So here, let me give you a lead measure. So they go in at halftime. How are they doing in rebounds? Do we have more rebounds than the other team has? How are we doing at the free throw line? Is our free throw percentage above X percent?
Got it.
Do we have fewer turnovers than the other team does? They have what's called 50-50 balls. That's whenever the basketball is loose and either team can get to it. Are we winning the 50-50 balls? Those are called lead measures. So let's talk about this referring to the church, because we just heard some of them. Lag measures in church are baptisms, attendance, and giving. 691 new givers. All right? So those are all lag measures. So in church, these are things we measure. But however, can we actually make somebody get baptized?
No.
Mm-mm. It's a bad idea. It's a bad move. We don't ever make somebody get baptized. Can you make somebody short for church? Can you make somebody move the dot over in their paycheck and write out a check for that amount of money and turn it in? Mm-hmm. You know, in actuality, and this is really hard for a guy, ladies, you're not going to understand this, the men will.
Okay.
Because men are fixers. We want to fix everything. Hey, this isn't funny. This is serious stuff.
Yeah.
No, I'm messing with you. We're fixers. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact, I know I'm a fixer because my wife tells me to quit fixing her.
Uh-huh.
Okay? We're fixers. If something's broke, we fix it. Well, one of the things I've learned in life is you can't fix everything. One of those things I've learned is I can't make people do anything. I can encourage them. I can grease the runway for them as much as I can, but I can't make anybody do anything. But what are some things the church can do that would affect these measures right here? Because wouldn't you agree, more people, how many of you guys think you're baptizing enough people? Good, no hands, because you're not. If you're baptizing 20,000 people a year, you're not baptizing enough people. How many of y'all think you got the attendance about right? Let's stop here. Right? we're giving enough money, we can quit now. Now, I've never been in church where I've heard that. Yeah, that's exactly right. Never heard that one. The attendance thing, yes. Yeah, it's kind of like, yeah, we're done there. But, yeah. No, that never happens. So let's look at some lead measures that affect these right here. Lead measures. Baptisms are affected by gospel conversations. If you don't share the gospel, nobody gets saved. Right? Now, does everybody you have a gospel conversation with get saved?
No.
But if you never share the gospel, I guarantee you nobody gets saved. And so, baptisms are affected by gospel conversations. Attendance is affected by contacts in new groups. I guarantee you, folks, the more people your group contacts during the week, the more people are going to show up on Sunday. Here's the rule. People go where they're cared for.
Yeah.
They go where they're cared for. Mm-hmm. If they feel like you care about them, they show up. If they feel like you don't care about them, they don't show up. Now, what I hear a lot of times in Sunday school is, well, you know, they know where we are. Well, what happens to us is we get focused on the people who are attending, and we miss the people who are absent. Now, here's what you need to understand. When you're leading a group, if somebody misses six times in a row, the only way to get them back is to go to their house, get on your knees, and beg them to come back. Six times. I was teaching a Sunday school class one time, and I had a couple join my class. They hadn't joined the church yet, but they joined our class. Joined Melinda. Great couple, very nice, already saved, looking for a church home. They started coming to our group, and I mean, they just fit with us. I mean, it's just a perfect fit. And they came more regularly than the church members did. I mean, it was that kind of a fit. They loved it. We loved them. Everything was fantastic. They finally missed, you know, been coming about 6 months. They missed a Sunday. And I thought, you know, we probably ought to call them, but I thought, everybody misses a Sunday, right? Do y'all ever miss a Sunday? Do you ever miss a Sunday?
I do.
Okay, I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I appreciate your transparency.
Don't worry.
So I didn't think anything of it, and then they missed another Sunday, and I kind of thought, well, they're probably on vacation. You know, 2 week vacation, you're going to miss two Sundays. Then they missed a third Sunday, and I thought, you know, I probably ought to give them a ring. And so about Thursday or Friday, because, you know, you put this off as long as you can, I got to call Joe. So I called him up and said, hey, Joe, it's Bob Mayfield. I just want to touch base with you and, you know, see how you guys are doing. He said, Bob, thanks for calling. He said, we're doing okay. He said, my dad passed away 3 weeks ago. And I'm like, oh, my God. I said, I'm so sorry. And he said, yeah, we've been going back and forth. I lived in Dallas. And he said, we've been going back and forth to Dallas on weekends. Trying to wrap things up and sell things and all this kind of stuff. And, I said, Joe, I'm so sorry. And we visited a little bit, and I prayed with him. And I said, well, Joe, I said, you're going to be in town this weekend? He said, yeah, we're back. And I said, well, great, we'll see you in class Sunday. And I was saying goodbye, and I could hear him talking. I put the phone back to my ear, and he said, Bob, we're not coming back. Why not? He said, Bob, I've been gone for 3 weeks.
Nobody's called.
Me, mm-hmm. My wife, and our three kids.
Yeah.
We have not had a phone call.
Yeah.
We have not had a card.
Yeah.
We have not had a letter.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody from the church has contacted us.
Yeah.
Now, I'm the minister of education, and he's in my class.
Mm.
I hung up the phone, and that Sunday, me and my class had to come to Jesus' meeting, and I told them what happened, and we made a decision right then that would never happen again. I could have just kind of blown that off, Well, you know, people come, people go. I'm glad I did. Because if I had not brought it up with our group, I would have been enabling bad behavior. Mm-hmm. And one of the things you need to remember as leaders is we are not here to enable bad behavior. There are times, and thank goodness we didn't have any guests that Sunday, but there are times where we need to sit down and say, we got some bad behavior going on here, and we need to fix it. So let's look at a couple of things here that I think will help. Lag measures, when the focus is on lag measures, we lead with why weren't you here Sunday, right? Attendance,
mm-hmm.
which is guilt and shame. We'll cast guilt or we'll shame people into coming. But with lead measures, when we're staying in touch with folks,
mm-hmm.
we're communicating love and compassion. Hey, are you doing okay? Haven't seen you in a couple weeks. Right? Or, hey, I'm calling to see if there's anything I can pray about for you. Guys, that is a great line.
Mm-hmm.
I'm calling to see, is there anything I can pray about for you? That's the difference whenever we're talking about lead measures and lag measures. Lead measures, we're trying to get on the front end, so we're leading with love and compassion. When our concern is attendance, we lead with guilt and shame. So what kind of group do you want to have? Have I shamed you?
Yeah.
we all want to have the group on the right, correct?
Yeah.
So do the things, the lead measures. And if you do the lead measures here, you'll actually get this over here. Okay? All right. Let's move along here. Leadership matters. This is just a little bit more philosophy stuff here. Your life Bible study has the ability, really should be, the way your church does the lead measures. They can't do the lead measures from the worship platform. The lead measures happen in your life Bible study group. It gets the church small enough to manage. Groups are small enough for accountability. There's the big one right there. So you can sneak into worship. Nobody knows if you're there, and then if you miss a few Sundays, nobody knows. I mean, you can. But when you're engaged in a life Bible study, people know when you're absent. And then groups are small enough to be led. It's much easier to lead a smaller group than it is to lead a huge group. Smaller groups are easier to lead, and also it's easier to get more people involved in the leadership, and we're going to go through that in just a few minutes. All right, is everybody doing okay?
Steve.
Somebody say Steve.
See.
Move yet. Okay.
I think one thing we fail to do sometimes is not just to wait till they're gone 6 weeks, but I mean, just when they come to visit, to follow up with them then. I mean, maybe they're looking at other churches, but that's okay. But just let them know then we're interested in you being with us.
Yeah.
Encourage the visitors. Once they're in the doors, it's easier to convince them to stay than it is to let them walk out the door and go somewhere else.
Good work.
And I don't think we do enough visitation. I know our church visits on Sunday afternoons, but it is amazing how few people we have that go out to visit. For this mass of 5,000 people, I've never seen maybe over 40 or 50 go visit. And to me, we're just lackadaisical in spreading the gospel and going to visit people in hospitals or homes or those that have been here in these doors and maybe aren't coming back.
That's
a
great word.
It's a great opportunity.
We're going to talk about that in just a couple of slides, but that's excellent. Thank you for sharing that. Okay. Here's basically your life Bible study group structure. and I gave you like a 2 or 3 sentence descriptor for each job. Now, how many people here want to be like the director? Like Carolyn. We got some director types in here. Okay, good, good. I didn't put teacher up there. How many want to be teachers? I saw your hand go up and you put it down. Okay, all right. You thought I was about to say outreach, didn't you?
Outreach.
No, okay. How about outreach? Yeah, I'm going to have to work on the outreachers. Okay, I've got one outreacher over there.
I do outreach too.
Outreach, okay. Shepherds or care groups? Fellowship? Prayer? Discipler? Nice. Did I leave anybody off the list? Okay, let's walk through these real quick. What's the director's job? Everything. It is. It's everything.
And it's a motivator, too.
Initiator, motivator. Here's, if you're a director, let me give you your job in a couple of lines. Number one, management by walking around. That's kind of your job. You look and you watch and you listen. Okay? That's one of your jobs. The other thing is delegate. If you want to be a director, you've got to be a delegator. I think I saw one of the slides in there. It says, it's from Harry Pylon. He says, if you want to do the work of 10 men,
get 10 men to do it.
Yeah. Right. You saw that slide too. And I thought, that's brilliant. That's exactly right. Yeah. So you're the director. You've got a big job. You can't do the job all by yourself. Now I'm going to do a little telling on my wife. Nobody let her know. Please don't, you know, put this out on Instagram or anything like that. But my wife is not a delegator. She is not a delegator. So we'll invite people to come over to the house. I'll say, honey, you know, do the Pyatts have, what do they bring? Oh, nothing. Oh, okay. Well, how about the Rasmussen's? Oh, no, nothing. I'm cooking everything.
What are you doing now? They love cooking food.
Well, no, I just hate to ask people to do. Bingo. If you want to be a director and you hate to ask people to do things, you're going to have to get over that. Here's the other thing for a director. Let people fail. I've discovered we spend a whole lot of time in church covering up for other people's failures. Let them fail. Okay, so the fellowship doesn't have any drinks. Heap down spiritual disdain on the person that forgot to bring the drinks. Okay, that's instead of having the director at the last minute running off to get stuff. Who's supposed to bring the drinks? The Mayfields?
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
My wife would be saying, why didn't you tell me? That's okay. Let people fail. Because if they forget one time, they won't forget again. Right? If you're constantly coming up behind people and cleaning up their mess before it becomes a mess, that's called enablement. And it's just going to keep, they're not going to grow. Our job, folks, is to grow up more leaders. That's one of the things, we're multipliers. And if we're covering up their mistakes all the time, it's not good. So director, you're the initiator. Outreach, you do evangelism and outreach. Emphases. We'll talk about these a little bit more depth here in a few minutes. What time am I supposed to be done?
Oh, 11:05.
Okay. Shepherd, that's a personal minister. I've got a little formula for you, shepherds. You shepherd type. Anybody here want to work in children's area, student area? Anybody here? Are they all with the other? Okay. A lot of this was still transferable to those areas as well. Fellowship, you're the social coordinator. That's your job. Do the social stuff. Prayer, you're the prayer organizer. The prayer organizer doesn't have to do all the praying. They just need to make sure prayer gets done, and prayer requests, prayer needs get shared. And then also the discipler, especially for new believers. We have new believers stepping into a completely different world, and we assume they know how to work the system. And they don't. And they come for 2 or 3 weeks, and then they quit coming, and it's because nobody ever took them and said, hey, look, let me help you out here. let's talk about this. What can I do to help you? I mean, they need somebody to come alongside them and basically disciple them. It may just be basic rudimentary discipleship, but it beats nothing. Come alongside them and help them understand what's taking place. Directors, initiator, you oversee the administrative group. You enlist your leaders. The director is the ministry the leader enlistment person. Communicate to the leaders. For a director, you should never have a leader show up on Sunday that doesn't know what's going on. All leaders need to know what's going on, what's expected of them. If you're going to have, I'm just going to throw one out here. If you're going to have shepherd leaders share a report, they need to know before Sunday morning that they're sharing reports. Okay? And so this basic stuff, but consistent communication with group leaders leads to a group that's accomplishing its mission. If the director is communicating with the leaders, here's what happens. It's a two-way street. The leaders know what's expected of them. And also, they get to provide feedback back to the director on how things are going. See how that works? But if the director never contacts the leadership, the group's leadership, eventually it's just going to be a Bible study and nothing else. There won't be any fellowships, there won't be any personal care taking place. So the director has a big, big job. All right. Let's move along to, I think it's outreach. Outreach leaders, enlist some, again, enlist help. You're going to see most of these, I'm going to talk about multiplying yourself. Contact guests and potential members of the group. When my wife and I moved to Oklahoma City, we decided, we didn't decide to go to church. Let me rephrase that. That didn't come out exactly the way I was meant for it to. We were no longer being paid to go to church. So we got to select our own church. I got to find out what you guys go through. And so we visited 4, 5, 6 churches in our area. Guess how many of them contacted us? Zero.
Zero.
Wow.
This is Oklahoma City.
Wow.
The buckle in the Bible Belt. We visited 6 or 7 churches. We did not hear a peep out of any of them. Finally, school started. We moved from Arizona. My kids went to school. They come home. Both of them got invited to a church. It was on Wednesday night, and we ended up going there. But it's because some church kids invited them to come to church on Wednesday night. Right then, I decided if I'm ever a minister of education again and not a Sunday school specialist, my church, we want to be calling people, and we want to be contacting people. Folks, do not let folks come. God brought people to your church with the desire for you to minister to them. Don't waste these precious people and let them slip away. Some of them need salvation. Some of them need ministry. Some of them just need some friends and they just want to plug into a life Bible study and just have some friends. Okay. So This is so important, the outreach leader, what they do. And so keep the group focused on evangelism. I've got a couple of other things I'm going to show you. I've discovered there are 3 arenas of evangelism. I was doing a consultation for a church in Oklahoma City and asked them how many people their church baptized last year. Church runs about 400. Pastors always know this number, by the way. How many did you baptize? The pastor says, 18. How'd you baptize them? How'd you baptize them? With water, okay. How did you reach them? A little sprinkling here, some pouring there, and a little baptism right there. Okay, so how did you reach them? Well, they didn't really know, so I gave them a month, came back, and said, here's what we did. We had we reached 6 kids and baptized them at sports camp. We had 2 kids get saved at youth camp, 2 at Vacation Bible School, 2 at children's camp. We had 4 apparently got saved just by responding to the gospel being preached from the pulpit. And then we had, did I say 4? And then 2 got saved, apparently just a neighbor. You know,
bless you.
You're welcome. Some people just witnessed to the neighbor something and they got saved. So that's 18 people. And all of a sudden I realized we've got three arenas of evangelism taking place here. The first one's program. Vacation Bible School, youth camp, children's camp, sports camp, Disciple Now, I mean, you know, retreats, whatever it might be. Then we got pulpit. Pastor preaches the gospel from the pulpit. And we got personal. Church of 400, average attendance, which means they got 600-700 people actually involved. Reach two people through personal evangelism. Does anybody see a problem here? Now, hear what I'm about to say. Do not quit doing Vacation Bible School. Don't stop doing programs. Lifeway Research tells us that only about 40% of unchurched America will come to an event or just come to church. 60% are not coming to church. How are we going to reach them? They're not going to come to your fun event out here on the parking lot with the bouncy bounces and all that. They're not coming. How are you going to reach them? How do you think they're reaching them in China? Gospel conversations. Regular people like you and me having gospel conversations. Lost people. Now, I saw in the notes that I was given that this needs to be stressed. I'm going to say it a little bit differently. But your life Bible study does not exist for itself. Your life Bible study exists to proclaim the gospel. Now, I'll go one step further. How many of you guys want to have a boring life Bible study? Can I see your hands? Boring. You just want your you want people sleeping through your life Bible study. Okay. Can I please hands? I know somebody wants this. Nobody wants that. My job in Oklahoma with 1,800 churches, I hear it all the time. My Sunday school class is boring. This curriculum's boring. Our teacher's boring. I mean, I hear it all the time. Let me tell you what I've learned. My experience has been a group that's sharing the gospel and seeing people get saved is never, ever boring. I've never been in a boring group that's sharing their faith, ever. There's something about the gospel power that just takes it to the next level. All right, so I'm going to quit preaching and move along. Shepherd leaders, contact your group as assigned by your director. I've got a little formula here. I like to have about five people per group. Here's why I like to have five people per group. If you have 50 people in your group, are you going to call them all every week? You have 20 people in your group, you're going to call them all every week? You have five? These phone calls take 3 minutes. So in 15 minutes a week, you can contact every person in your group. And I also like men call men, women call women. I don't think we need to be setting people up for failure. You know, I mean, I know no woman wants to call me, and so that's kind of fine. But we don't need to be setting men and women up for failure. I don't want some married man calling my married wife. Period. And so the other reason for that is if you do it by couples, like five couples in a group, and there's a leader, there's one of the couples is going to be a leader, who's actually going to make the phone calls?
I'm being here.
The women are going to make the phone calls. We all know it. Because men are lazy. Men are slobs. We will get as uninvolved as possible in this kind of ministry. How are we going to raise up men to be leaders? Give them a job. Say, you're a shepherd leader, and your wife isn't making these calls for you. You got five guys to call. Right?
Okay.
Here's somebody say something. Okay. Here's people say, well, what if I call somebody up and I don't know them? I mean, what do I say? I've got this scripted for you right here. It doesn't get any better than this right here. It's scripted out. You might want to just write this down. In fact, if you'll email me, I'll send you the whole presentation. All right? But here's the script. Hi. That's a good way to start a conversation. Hi. My name is Bob Mayfield. Let me stop right here. You can use your own name if you want to. All right? So, my name is Bob Mayfield, and now listen to how I worded this. I belong to your Bible group. I belong to your Bible group. What have I just done?
Because they take ownership. It gives them ownership.
It's their group. That's right. I'm giving them ownership. It's not like, hey, you belong to my group. No,
yeah.
But I also use the word belong, not member. I'm a member of you. I belong. Mm-hmm. I belong to your group. Yes, sir.
It makes you feel welcome. You
know, yes.
That you're part of a family.
Thank you.
It's called like in-grouping. So it's like you've got out-grouped people who are always outside of the group, and you want to make them feel like they're in the in-group. So by saying it's yours, that automatically removes the out-group identity and makes them in it.
Exactly. So if you've got somebody who hadn't been coming in a while, which is everybody's biggest nightmare, is calling somebody who hadn't been to church in like 8 years.
Okay.
Oh, boy. Yeah, there you go. I'm calling to see if there's anything I can pray about with you today. Anything I'm praying about you today. Now, 9 times out of 10, what are they going to say?
No.
But what's going to happen one of these days?
Yes.
Well, now that you mention it, I just lost my job. I've got cancer. My wife just discovered this. My spouse just discovered that. Now, when that happens, what are you going to do?
Pray for them.
On the phone, right then. Mm-hmm. Don't pull this off. Okay, we'll pray for you. No. We're all Baptists here. We know that game, right? Right then. So if you're a shepherd leader or a caregiver leader, there's your script. You can even do this with the people you know. You may not have to say, hi, I'm Bob Mayfield. Because probably it's on their caller ID. Right? So, yes, ma'am.
I was just going to say, when you said someone that hasn't been there 8 years, oh boy, and then I had the thought, you're doing that, you know, as a representation of Christ, so even if they are hostile or reject you, they're not really rejecting mm-hmm. you. It's, you know, Christ mm-hmm. through you. And so it shouldn't really be anything to worry about or any hesitation for us to call people.
Yeah.
No matter how, you know, so just if I think about it like that, it's easier for me.
That's a great way to say that. That's much more spiritual than the way I said it. I appreciate that. Thank you. But no, you're right. You're exactly right. Okay. Is everybody good here?
I had a quick question.
Go ahead.
Oh, is it a question?
Go ahead.
Just in regards to like praying for people, I know there are some people who are uncomfortable with the idea of being prayed over the phone. Is it better to ask or to just say, I'd like to?
Oh, yeah. No. Just say, may I pray with you over the phone?
Okay.
And that's all you got to do.
And
I guarantee you 95% of people say yes. Especially if they're in dire straits.
Mm.
Yes. I had a guy, my next door neighbor, when we lived in Arizona, was a devout atheist. And he came down with cancer. And I went to the hospital to visit with him. And I walked in and talked to him and said, hey, Dave, do you mind if I pray with you? He said, no, I'll pray for him. I walked out, his wife followed me out in the hallway in the hospital. She said, I can't believe you just did that. I said, did what? He said, let you pray for him. He doesn't believe in prayer. I said, I believe he does now.
Yes.
You know, so you never know. Fellowship leader, you're the party person. This is the best job, all right? Party person. Organize the group so community happens. What we're trying to do is we're trying to get people to make friends, have friends. And so have party. Here's another thing, though, fellowship leader needs to do. How about you have a greeter at the door?
I'm the greeter.
Okay, who's the greeter?
I am.
You're the greeter, okay?
So, I'm the greeter. I'm the prayer coordinator.
Oh, my.
And
the record keeper.
Record keeper.
You are too busy. give something away.
Okay,
good job. Good job.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, here you go.
Yeah.
So, you need this one right here. There you go. Okay. And list help. Then the prayer leader, organize a group to pray. The prayer leader doesn't have to do all the praying, but organize a group to pray. Receive prayer needs from the shepherd leaders. I'd recommend you receive those prayer needs and then just email them out. Because there are people, they want to pray for everything. Remember to pray for the whole group, not just the attenders. Most of the time, we're just taking prayer requests from the people who showed up. And we don't realize that the people that didn't show up may have a reason for that, and they need prayer. And so distribute the prayer list to the group weekly. And that best distribution way to do that is through email. And then disciple leader, engage the group in close group disciple-making opportunities. Engage new believers. This is really when a new person joins the group, the disciple maker ought to be on them. I mean, like a pit bull on a poodle. They ought to be. Yeah. So I mean, you got to get. Don't just sit there. The longer you wait, the harder it is to do. It's like I should have done this 6 weeks ago. I'm sorry. Just do it. And then lead group members to be involved in church close group activities. You have Wednesday night Bible studies. I mean, this church has Beth Moore.
Yeah.
Really, seriously. So get people involved in close group activities. Close group activities tend to be short term, and once the group's been meeting for a couple of weeks, it's closed. Nobody else can join it. Your life Bible study, on the other hand, is called an open group. It means anybody can come in at any time, and it's cool. Okay? Your church needs both. So be supportive of what your church is doing in other places. Now let me talk about a couple of things here. All leaders need to connect with the mission of the group to make disciples. We're all about making disciples. Do your ministry. Do your ministry. If every shepherd leader does their ministry, your group will explode. If the outreach leader does their ministry, you will see lost people coming to Christ. Okay, do your ministry. I love this verse here, Galatians 6:9. Let us not grow weary in doing good, for in due season we will reap if we do not give up. Everybody has those moments in time, guys, where you just want to quit. Stay with me. Lots of marathon, not a sprint. Mm-hmm. So stay with it. It's going to be okay. Develop your replacement. Now, your potential leaders, you need to know this coming in. The first day you're on your job, you need to start looking for a replacement. Who could I teach to do this? Who could I teach to be a director? Who could I teach to be a shepherd leader, a fellowship leader? And you invest yourself in that person. Teach them how you make phone calls. Show them how you plan a party. Model for them what it's like to give ministry away. Another thing, study the Bible study. You guys get the Bible study you're going to be that you have on Sunday if you have it in advance. Yes, no?
No.
No.
My class is not. No.
Okay,
no.
Never mind.
I don't know what they're going to talk about next week.
Never mind. No. Study the Bible study after you get it, study it. Maybe have a talk with Ben. Okay, all right, so do your ministry joyfully. Man, I'm going to tell you, as a minister of education and a guy right now that goes to churches all over Oklahoma and Texas and Sunday, Georgia, that nobody wants to leave a bunch of negative people. And Jesus didn't call you to be a negative person.
No.
He called to be joyful. Read the book of, anytime you just read the book of Philippians. Realize Paul's in prison. And what's he doing? Rejoice. Rejoice. Exclamation marks. Rejoice. Paul's a happy guy. And so, do your ministry joyfully. Nobody wants to lead a bunch of negative, you know, people with, you know, ugly faces and, you know, I'm just, they're mad all the time and stuff like that. I mean, no, but do you want to lead people like that?
No.
Well, then don't be one of those people. Now, here's the little secret sauce about leadership. People model their leader. People model their leader. Now, you might say, well, our leader is Greg. Not really. You know who the most influential person in the church is?
The member.
The people in the Life Bible. And they're in the Life Bible study with. And so the attitude that takes place in the Life Bible study affects it much more than Pastor Greg's attitude from the pulpit. You've ever been through a building campaign? Your pastor can preach. I mean, he can call down the thunder from heaven from the pulpit. But what's going to happen one of these days is somebody's going to go into your Life Bible study and say, what do you guys think about what we're trying to do? And whatever that group says, we'll make it or break it. Because that's where the influence is. So make sure your Life Bible study is being led properly. If you're going to be a leader, as Romans 12, about 29 says, lead diligently. Don't be a sloppy leader. Lead diligently. Now, let me give you a couple more things and we're done. Your mission is to multiply. Ultimately, the Great Commission is about multiplication. Your mission is to multiply yourself because your church needs new leaders, yourself because your church needs new believers, and also the group because your church needs new groups. Now, you knew I was going to get around to this sooner or later, right? New groups? Because everybody loves it when somebody comes in and starts talking about splitting up groups. Everybody loves that. And you guys really are ready to go. I think it is that time. Nobody likes to have their groups split. Nobody. You got to do it anyway. Now, I don't use the word split in the Southern Baptist Church. I prefer the word branch or something like that. I used to use the word birth, but then ladies told me that's not always the most pleasant experience. So I like the word branch now. I use branch. But you got to start new groups. Now, let's go back to our attitude.
Joyfully.
It doesn't have to be a 50-50 split. If just five or six people want to go start a new group, let them. Encourage them. Well, there's the Power of 10 thing. How many of you guys would like to see your church grow 500 people next year? It's 50 groups. You can do it. I did it, and you guys all know I'm no great shakes. Got, what, about 5-6 million people here in Houston? Church campuses all over the place, new campuses growing up all over the place. You can start 50 groups like that. Do it. Be supportive. You can pull this off. And let me just end up with, I think this is it. Well, social circles, I'm going to skip that one because we're out of time. It's one of my favorite scripture verses. Unless a grain of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains by itself alone. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. John 12:24. Potential leaders, you need to know this is the leadership principle of Jesus. If you want to be a leader, you're going to have to die to yourself. But if you die, guess what's going to happen? You are going to bear much fruit. You will bear much fruit.
Oh.
So there's going to be times when you don't feel like making a phone call. Make the phone call. Guide yourself and make the phone call. There are going to be times whenever you don't want your group to start a new group. Die. Well, this is uplifting, isn't it? Yeah. Wow. Yes, ma'am.
Sorry, I know it's time to go, but I don't want to go without saying testimony. I am from Venezuela, and I was here in 2016, and when I came to this church, I was in Save Life Class, which is for single adults. And they were also welcoming, and they were really nice. I felt like at home. And I'm back this year because they brought me back. Because of the situation of my country, they called me in Venezuela, they sent me things there, they knew the situation and everything there, and they prayed for me. And I mean, I am a believer for a really long time, but what they did for me, my family, my church back there was so awesome. And when I came back last week, I've been here for a week, and I couldn't stop crying. I was in class, and I was, because everyone was like, oh, so you came. Everybody remembered me, and they were praying, and they were so good. So don't stop doing what you're doing. You're here to serve. You're here to give your life, pour your life for the Lord, because you are doing something amazing. And I was listening to all that, and they've grown. A lot of people have now branching. They're in different places, but the majority of them are there. And, well, even Pastor Greg said, oh, you're back. I was like, do you remember me? Yeah, from Venezuela. And it was so nice. And I'm here because I want to serve at the Spanish campus. I am a translator. I am a missionary in Venezuela. And I am a pastor in Venezuela too, but they sent me here. So I'm here.
So you're a missionary to America from Venezuela.
To America, yes. To the mostly to the refugees and to the people, rich people. I work for with Bible translations and literacy, mobilizing people. So that's why I'm here. Mostly women.
Yeah.
I am Angelica Maldonado. I am here on Sunday morning, afternoon, and whatever you want.
Good deal.
But yeah, just
okay. Three quick words that'll change your group. You ready? How many of you guys want to be in a group that talks and shares? Yeah, okay, one of you. Okay, speak just between you and me. Okay. Y'all don't listen. Three words. No. I've done it here several times. Tell me more.
Yeah.
Have you heard me do that? Tell me more. And you right? First time you say, ask a question for somebody sharing, ask them if they're sharing, what do you say? Tell me more. You know what they're looking for?
Acceptance.
They want to know if it's safe. And so when you say, that's interesting, tell me more. It's safe. And then after that happens, what do you say?
Thank you.
You say it again. You say it, that's right. You say it again. You say, tell me more again.
Right.
Here's what I've discovered in your group. The sooner in your group time you can say, tell me more, the more transparent the group will be for the rest of the Bible study. Because everybody else in the group wants to know how safe it is too.
Wow.
God. Right? When you're on the phone talking to somebody, you're a shepherd leader, and they start talking, they say something. What do you want to tell them? That's interesting. Tell me more. And it opens people up. They want to know if it's safe. You saying, tell me more, says, I'm interested, it's safe. Go ahead and tell me more. Okay, I've kept you guys way too late. We're like 10, 15, 14, 15, 10, whatever. I just know you're blessed, dismissed, and prayed over.